Hi, I'm Jim Daly, president of Focus on the Family, and I want to thank you for listening to this edition of the Boundless Podcast. Your financial gifts make this download possible, so I hope you'll go to focusonthefamily.com/donate. And again, thanks for helping families thrive. Boundless Show.
Hey folks, welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, and we are heading into Christmas, which I love. And when we head into Christmas, I love talking about certain topics, and this week is no exception. We have got, we're actually going to talk about love languages today for the most part. Speaking of love languages, I guess one love language would be to just come out and say it, which is kind of reflected in our inbox question today. One of our folks wants to know that awkward stage of one person saying they love you, and then you kind of don't know how to reciprocate, or if, you know, maybe your feelings aren't in the same place. So how do you navigate that? And how do you feel like, you know, you're not being unkind, but also giving, you know, being open to what they are telling you as well. So fortunately, we have Dr. Jared Pingleton answering that for us. And then in our culture segment, we have Dr. Gary Chapman. You know him as the author of The Five Love Languages. He's actually written a singles edition. Hey, thanks for remembering the singles, Gary. So we're going to be talking to him today about that and really how we actually can give and receive love as a single person. We're going to kick off that conversation by talking to singles right here at the round table and kind of putting our take on it in the real life, you know, how do we actually practically live this out? And so I have got Nina, Matthew, and Matt here. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Great to have you. Okay, so we're talking about love languages, and I asked you before we started if you all know what yours is. And according to Gary Chapman, we should all have about two. So you should have kind of your two tops, although I like to think that all of them are mine. And it's interesting because in his book, one of the most interesting things I thought he said is that the hardest people to understand the concept of love languages, there are two types. One are those that felt like they received love well throughout their lives in many different ways. And so they're kind of like, I don't know what mine is. And I feel like that's kind of where I may be because my parents were both very loving. I mean, we were a relatively affirming family for the most part. And then the other folks that have difficulty are those that did not receive love well, did not receive a lot of affirmation or encouragement growing up. And so they're kind of like, what do I even do with this? So I want to start out, before we get into love languages, I want to just throw this question out to y'all. And that is, as single people, do you find yourself feeling feeling unloved, that's kind of weird, just like, Eeyore. But I mean, if you're just like, I feel like I am so loved, or I'm just, I mean, is that your reality? Or do you feel kind of like a little bit of a famine when it comes to receiving love from others in an appropriate way?
I think for me, it's kind of tough because, I mean, I'm 24 going on 25. And so it's like, every one of my friends is getting engaged and married. Like, that's just the reality. And so, and here I am single. And so when I get on Facebook and another friend got engaged or something, that's when I feel most, you know, like, oh crap, like I don't feel loved by somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And then, but I don't think it's like a constant, like haunting me every day sort of deal. I think it's more like I'm aware of it when I'm around people who are married or dating, or when I see it and realize what I don't have. But a lot of times, you know, you just kind of, you know, it's not like it's on my mind day in and day out. Like I'm fine. I've been single most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, you have. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I have a really good community of friends out here. I moved out here in 2012 and have been involved in a really good church and just a really strong community of good friends. So that's helped a lot. So it's, for me, it's almost when I go home to Michigan and then, you know, my family life still goes on and people are having babies and, you know, boyfriends and girlfriends and getting married. So it's almost more of when I go home, just needing to know from them that, you know, of course I know that they still love me, but just that we're spending time together and just that they know what's going on in my life and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would say that for the most part, I, feel loved, by my friends and family. And, yeah, I guess we haven't said what our ours are. Quality time mm-hmm. is definitely my top one, and food is my second. So no, I added a sixth for Gary. No quality. So yeah, I get to
That's
spend a lot of time.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, quality time and words of affirmation. So like, I feel like those are pretty, you know, usual to get from friends. I have noticed, you know, I've had a couple friends move away recently, and so it's been a lot more difficult to get that quality time mm-hmm. that I was used to getting. And so I feel, I feel myself missing the amount of time I used to get to spend with them in particular. And it's also because they moved, it just changed the dynamic of the group of friends that they were a part of. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I do find myself kind of wishing for, you know, that the couple years that we had a really tight knit group. But at the same time, you know, trying to think like, well, what might be headed my way soon, so mm-hmm. we'll see. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So what? I mean, you did say quality time and then words of affirmation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You feel Matthew?
Yeah.
Would be yours. Okay. Nina, how about you?
Yeah. Yours? Those are actually quality time is my first, and words of affirmation was a close second. So I think physical touch was the lowest. I'm not a touchy feely person, but
same here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's definitely funny how many singles say that. They're like, I'm not really a touchy feely. Just interesting. That's how it plays out that way. What about you, Matt?
I would say that my first one is words of affirmation, but then quality time is definitely second, and then...
You're so different from us.
I know, I don't even know how me and Matthew are friends. It's hard, so... Mm-hmm. But I would say that gifts is probably the lowest, especially, like, I was telling Matthew on the car ride, I'm just, like, Christmas is such a stressful time because I'm the worst gift giver. Like, I just always just... Christmas Eve, I'm just buying, like, just going out to Target and like, they kind of like that, so let's do that. And then I feel bad because I care about them, but I just, I can't express it with, you know, a $10 DVD.
Okay, well, you're going to have to listen to this interview with Gary Chapman because he's going to tell you how you can grow more proficient in these love languages. So we'll see about that. Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about, because I want to delineate between... because you alluded to it a little bit, Matt, about, you know, kind of being around people that are in relationships and stuff like that. But what's weird is that, you know, everyone, the love languages aren't, you know, a respecter of romantic attachment or anything. I mean, it's just something that everyone should be mm-hmm. growing and cultivating and being able to give and receive. So how do you guys feel like, and then Nina, too, what you were saying about, you know, now that you're in a good church and stuff mm-hmm. and you have friends. And it's weird because I had a long season of my life where I equated, like, hanging out with people as being loved by them. And then I realized, oh no, actually that's just like, we don't have anything else to do. So we're just hanging out. So kind of like, and then I mistook that for love. And I'm like, oh no, wait a minute. Okay, no, the people that I like actually. Yeah. So when I found that like in deeper friendships, it's like, no, I actively have to work to like love that person. Because my friends, mm-hmm. I think, have different love languages than I do. Mine mm-hmm. would also be time and affirmation. Mm-hmm. So, oh, we're all twins. But what do you guys think? I mean, how does that play out as you think about that? Like, really, I mean, do you ever feel misunderstood in either giving and receiving love or when you think you're in a spot with a relationship or what that looks like?
I think because I'm more of an introvert, and I don't think people realize offhand that I don't think they would think initially that quality time would be my first love language, and forgiving that for me to other people, that's hard to do because as an introvert, I don't draw energy from other people. I kind of feel at the end of the day like I just need, you know, I need to be alone and re-energize by being alone. So
explain to us what quality time means for you then.
Well, for me, I guess that means when other people, for receiving it, just when other people initiate it and sit, you know, and it doesn't necessarily even have to be, you know, let's go hang out at the mall or something. Even if someone just shows me through, you know, eye contact and asking me questions and just showing that they're genuinely interested in me and what's going on in my life, to me that's what it looks like. But yeah,
it's not inviting you to a large party where you're not going to know anyone,
right? Exactly. Not so much.
Okay. Note to self. Okay.
It's kind of funny. I think it's nice, like, having quality time as my top one, because I think, like, fellow guys do that pretty well. But words of affirmation, I mean, I'm not good at it, mm-hmm. like giving words mm-hmm. of affirmation. Mm-hmm. So I love it when I receive it, and I'll like hang on to something that somebody says for, mm-hmm. you know, months. Mm-hmm.
What's a good example of something that's been said to you that really made a difference? I mean, because I can't really think. I mean, yeah, sure. Guys don't stand around and be like, you're so meaningful in my life.
Right.
I don't know what a good guy way of saying that is.
I don't know if there is one. Like, you know, I don't know.
Has to be a code.
Right, exactly. I'm trying to think of a specific thing. But what comes to mind is just the time that my brother-in-law and I got to spend over Thanksgiving break just now. And it was really funny. We were going, he and my sister and I, we were going through the Enneagram test, the personality profile thing. Mm-hmm. And I was having them answer some questions because I was kind of confused on them. And it was just really, it was really great. Like he just, again, I'm having trouble remembering specifics, but he just said some really, really affirming things. And I was just like, oh, we're friends, you know, like, I mean, I already knew we were like, we're really good friends. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it was just a reaffirmation of that. And even, just a deepening of our friendship that we've had since they've been married. So yeah, it's just really, I realize, or I remember in those moments when I do get those words of affirmation that definitely is one of mine. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm.
How, Matt, does that resonate with you? I mean, when you think of, like, cultivating good friendships with people, what aspects do you have to work at, and what aspects do you wish you received more of, like, in the friendships you have?
I think, I don't know, because I was thinking about how you said when you were hanging out with groups, like, for a long time, you felt like that was love. And for me, it's almost the opposite. Like, you know, I can hang out with people, and I don't know, especially, like, in this day and age with technology, like, it's easy to get a meal with a few friends, but you know, like your cell phones are out half the time and you're just watching TVs mm-hmm. or just like, and even just like the conversation that we talk about, I think with guys, like, you know, it's easy to spend time with one another, but it's also super easy to like just talk about sports or just like TV and movies, whatever, mm-hmm. just like very surface level things. And so for me, I think I just yearn for like deeper conversations. I want to, I don't know, just get to know the person on a deeper level and also like be known mm-hmm. on a deeper level. And so it's challenging, especially with like non-Christian friends who, you know, that's not really, you know, something that's on their radar as much. And so just like looking for ways where I can like, you know, ask them more about their lives and stuff, and like wanting to share more about my life with them too. And I don't know, I feel like I would love to just like, with that quality time, like not just spending time with people, but even just like making sure that the conversations and stuff is like meaningful to mm-hmm. me, so that I can go home and be like, man, that was a great like hangout. Like that was really quality time. And it wasn't just one-on-one talking about.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because when you're trying to have those conversations with people that don't know how to have those conversations, that can be very exhausting.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's a great example of having to practice mm-hmm. love languages. Mm-hmm. Now, do you guys have any friends or family members who have a different love language from you, and you've had to practice speaking to them in a way that's, you know, mm-hmm. affirming their own love language?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my mom's is I think hers, and I don't think anyone in my family's actually taken the test, but I think I can see pretty quickly that my mom's is physical touch. She's very, you know, loves giving hugs and that kind of thing. And so I've realized that that's how she responds best, and that's what she needs. And so I've tried to force myself. That sounds, makes it sound
like hi mom, she doesn't mean it.
Yeah, but just getting more comfortable with that with her. And I don't know what my other siblings, I'm not sure what theirs are, but an acts of service, that doesn't come naturally to me either, so I have definitely had to practice that more. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, for me it's funny, my dad, I've kind of like you, Nina, like I've basically, I identified for my dad what mm-hmm. his love languages are. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure one of his is acts of service. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't, it's like not on my radar. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I don't interpret the nice
things.
Just
hire someone to do it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I mean, thanks for washing my car. Uh-huh. It's cool. So, but yeah, like I've had to cultivate that, I guess, faculty mm-hmm. in me to be able to recognize when he's, you know, showing me his kindness, or like he'll know that I want, so I'm wanting to buy some new camera equipment. And he's called me several times, having looked up, you know, different camera equipment, different mm-hmm. deals and stuff. And I'm like not just existentially prepared to have that conversation at the moment, but I just choose to know, like, oh, okay, like this is his way of really caring for me, and mm-hmm. and even then this can be quality time, which I then receive. So yeah, it's just been interesting to kind of reinterpret his actions mm-hmm. For mm-hmm. myself.
Yeah, it's funny trying to be more aware. I feel like that with my mom too, like just like I'll just mow the lawn or something and she'll be blown away and be like, oh, thank you so much. And it's just like, yeah, sure, like, whatever. And then she'll, you know, like, wash some clothes for me. And, like, I just don't really think to say thank you. I mean, like, it's nice and I'm, like, appreciative of it. But I'm sure it's probably, like, she's, like, sitting around, like, come on, notice that. And I just, yeah. like, I do notice it, but I just don't think to, mm-hmm. you know, translate that into, like, response or something. And so it's interesting trying to, like, be more aware of other people and, like, stop being, like, so, like, this is me, so this is you too. Like, just
yeah. yeah.
Love the way I love.
And it's been interesting how, like, with my family, how as in-laws have gotten introduced in the family, what they've been able to teach us. Because I grew up in a pretty, you know, straight-laced Scandinavian family. So, like, physical touch was kind of like the little back pat, you know, oh, good job, you know, that, whatever. And then my sister marries this guy that they do, like, big bear hugs, oh, like, gosh, for everything. Yeah. And I'm just like, whoa, that was a lot. You know? So it's funny. But now our family has gotten a little more huggy because we've started practicing yeah. you know, by virtue of having to like learn how to hug these people because they're going to come after us, you know. So yeah. That's just interesting.
That's really funny. My our family's the same way, like not very touchy, but mm-hmm. just like, oh, in the last year or two, like I'll be pretty purposeful about giving my sisters a hug when I leave. But it's funny to watch my brother-in-law, my little sister's husband, and then my older sister, they do what they call the in-law high five, where they're like, you know what? We're both comfortable with not hugging each other, but let's acknowledge one another. So therefore, the in-law high five.
I was actually told one time by a guy I dated that I did not hug appropriately. Oh. I had to learn how to hug.
I have a friend that...
I was just like that.
I have a friend that I've he's just as tall as me, but like, you know, there's just a certain way, like kind of a reciprocal hug, right arm up, left arm down. And for us, it's like, you know, he's like both arms under. I'm like, okay, here we go. So,
you know. That's so funny. That's where you just have to stop and say, okay, level playing ground. Let's figure this out. This isn't awkward every time. Yeah. Practice it a few times, right, see how yeah. it goes. Oh, that's too funny. So what would you say, like, if you could tell, you know, sit down and tell the people in your life, like, one, you know, at, you know, here's what you could do. I mean, here are the ideal ways, you know, top three ways that you could show love to me. What would you say? I mean, and obviously it can differ for different relationships that you have, but just, you know, to put it out there and tell, because I think it's so interesting how, you know, first of all, I think as singles, we're often love starved in the sense of not, you know, just not knowing what love is in some senses because we don't receive it. And I think a lot of people assume you just start loving people once you get married or that's when mm-hmm. you have to start practicing this stuff. And all the rest of us just kind of drift in and out and have these self-serving relationships. But the fact is we all need love and we all need to give love. So mm-hmm. if you were to say, you know, I mean, not in a weird way, like, love me, you know, what would be the best way that people could do that?
Yeah, like, put their phone down, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like just kind of practice not being distracted, maybe. Mm-hmm. And also for me, like part of quality time is, I mean, just being kind of like an academic, a huge nerd. Like ideas are such a big part of my life, and so like I feel really, really accepted and loved when somebody else is like really trying to grab a hold of like an idea I'm talking about mm-hmm. or that's important to me. And mm-hmm. so like, a lot of my quality time is like talking about big ideas and things like that. So, I just really connect well with people who share that mm-hmm. or even people who don't necessarily share it, but care that mm-hmm. I care about it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a big one for me.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. I agree with the putting the phones down, and that's, My family doesn't necessarily have a problem with that because they don't have smartphones, most of them, so that's not a big deal. But yeah, just in general, I mean, people are just often so busy and just on their phones all the time and just, I mean, just in general, distracted and on to the next thing. So for me, it's just taking the time to just slow down and understand what's going on in my life. And I think for a lot of people, friends and family that, especially back home, that don't necessarily know what's going on in my life, they sometimes feel maybe awkward with me still being single, and you know that question always comes up, oh, are you dating someone? No, not yet, you know. No. So it's, and sometimes I just feel like people don't really know what to say or just how to even ask me what's going on in my life. So and it kind of like what you said also, Matt, about if things that are interesting to me that aren't necessarily interesting to them, but they still, you know, are asking me about it, that makes me feel loved too.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because you know those people that when they're listening to you, you're the most important person to them
right then.
Exactly. I mean, they're few and far between.
Yes.
Right. You tell the people that are distracted, and as someone walks by, they're like checking them out.
Right.
Like, Sarah's like, can we focus here for 2 minutes?
Right, yeah. You know? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Matt?
I think, I don't know, one thing that's I just thought about that, I don't know, it just gets me so pumped when, like, I'll have a conversation with somebody and then, like, or even just if I'll post something on Facebook or just, like, mention something, and then, like, the next time I see that person, they'll bring it up and they'll say, like, hey, I was thinking about this, or mm-hmm. I noticed that this happened in your life. Like, just, like, that they're noticing me even when I'm not around. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if that counts as quality time because we're not with one another, but, like, just the fact that somebody has, like, been thinking about me, like, it just... Mm-hmm. makes me feel really special. It's just like, oh, cool. Like, mm-hmm. they care enough that they're, like, considering things that I've talked about or things that I've experienced, and they want, like, to know more when they see me next. It's, mm-hmm. I don't know. That's definitely a big one. And then definitely the things that they share, too, like, just being intentional and not so distracted with one another, I think is huge.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, good. It'll be interesting. Like I said, this next segment, we're going to move into an interview with Dr. Gary Chapman, who wrote The Five Love Languages, Singles Edition. And I think he in the book gives suggestions for how you can practice the different love languages. I mean, for me, even though mine, kind of where you were saying, Matthew, words of affirmation is one of mine. And then I realized, wow, I'm really bad at this. I think it's one of my love languages. But I just figure, you know, yeah, if I don't say anything, then it's all good. You know, just know we're all good. You know, whatever. And they're like, what?
Yeah.
So, just recognizing that you could, and it's kind of hard. You have to, like, force yourself to say something,
yeah,
or
yeah,
force
totally.
Yourself to
it's
do
true.
Something for someone,
yeah.
or force yourself, Matt, to go out and get a gift. Do not wait till Christmas. Oh my goodness. Okay. Now we're going to check up on you. Make sure you're not. You better not be at Target. With this
yeah.
So, but I think it's great to know that there is hope, and that the more we try, obviously, the more that will be seen and appreciated. So, thanks you guys for being part of the conversation.
Mm. Well, thank you.
Thanks.
It's fun.
Oh, holy night, the stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth.
Well, folks, we are here for this week's culture segment, and if you listened to the roundtable, you heard us talking about the five love languages and how even as singles, we are called to both express and receive love in different ways, and we all have our love languages. Usually, we have a couple of primary ones, and so we are not exempt as single people. This isn't something that you just move into when you start dating someone or when you get married, and then you're like, oh, I've got to start loving someone. No, we're all called, and we all desire to be loved and then to express love to others as well. So I am very privileged to have Dr. Gary Chapman with me. Hey, Dr. Chapman.
Hello, Lisa. Good to be with you today.
We always love it when we get experts on various topics because these are things that we like to think about quite often here at The Boundless Show. For those of you who don't know, Gary Chapman wrote, obviously, The Five Love Languages. And the book we're going to talk about today is actually the Singles Edition because he has said that he, as a pastor out on the East Coast, North Carolina, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Has gotten lots of questions from singles and lots of singles who said, well, I read your book and I've totally started applying it, you know, to myself. And I found that it's very helpful. And so he obviously thought, well, why not? Let's talk to singles directly and figure out how we can apply these. So we're going to go ahead and talk about this a little bit. So I want to, first off, I want to find out what your primary or top two love languages are, Dr. Chapman.
Words of affirmation.
Oh, okay.
So if this interview goes well, tell me I did a good job, okay?
I will. And that's actually one of mine as well. Although it has to be pretty, in fact, we were talking before we started taping, has to be pretty specific. And I would say that for most people, that's the case. You know, words of affirmation, just throwing something out generally isn't going to be helpful to someone, but to be specific and especially to them or to their situation or what you appreciate about them.
Yes. And you know, Lisa, it can focus on something they have done for you mm-hmm. or something you observed about them, but it could also focus on their personality mm-hmm. or their character. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be something they've done, but it does need to be specific. The more specific, the better.
Okay. And it's interesting because even though words of affirmation is one of mine, I found that growing up, I wasn't very good at giving that. I always assumed that I was affirming people, but I think I was just in my head or something.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, oh, yeah, of course, I think they're great, you know, but I never told them. I never verbalized it. And
yeah.
So that practice of it. Let's give us a review. Many of our folks have read the book or the original book, but give us an overview again of what those five are.
Well, one of them is words of affirmation, mm-hmm. using words to affirm the person. You can speak the words. You can write the words. I guess you could even sing the words, Lisa, mm-hmm. if you can sing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's words of affirmation. Secondly is, and these are in no particular order, acts of service, doing something for the other person that you know they would like for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you recognize a coworker is having a trouble with their computer, to say, hey, would you like for me to try to help you? You know, it's just mm-hmm. offering to do something for the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're going to the workroom and you're saying, I'm going down to the supply room. Would you like me to bring anything back for you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just little things like that, doing things for the other person. Then there's gifts. It's universal to give gifts as an expression of love. My academic background is anthropology. We've never found a culture where gift giving is not an expression of love. It's universal. And the gift doesn't have to be expensive. It's little things. You know, sometimes there's a song, little things, little things that count, you know. And then there's quality time, giving the person your undivided attention. I'm not talking about simply being in the same room, but you're engaging each other in conversation. Or perhaps you're doing something together that both of you enjoy doing and you're talking with each other as you do it. And then there's physical touch. We've long known the emotional power of physical touch. That's why we pick up babies and hold them and kiss them and cuddle them. And it communicates love on an emotional level, even when the baby doesn't understand the meaning of love. So those five languages apply in marriage. They apply with singles and all the singles relationship, the parents, the siblings, the roommates, the coworkers, the dating partners. If we learn how to love effectively, we have to learn how to communicate love in the other person's language.
So where do you think, Dr. Chapman, we got so messed up in the first place? Because I think a lot of singles will say, I can't remember the last time I felt an expression of love. I mean, I think a lot of singles feel forgotten, feel very unloved, whether in the church or in their own families. They feel like people just assume, you know, oh, yeah, well, hopefully we'll get them married off and then that person has to love them, you know, whatever. But I know for a fact in talking to married people that, you know, many people are lonely in their own marriages as well.
Yeah.
So why are we so love-starved and so unwilling or unable to give and receive love?
You know, I think, Lisa, part of it is that by nature, we are self-centered.
Hmm.
All of us are, married or single. Even little kids, you know, they want their way. And when you're focusing on getting your way, and you're asking in a relationship, what am I getting out of this? Or we're saying, well, they're not meeting my needs. Then, you know, the relationship is not going positive. But if you become a loving person, and this has to do with our attitude, if you have the attitude, I am here to enhance the lives of other people. So you encounter someone at work or in a social setting or at church, and you're thinking about, how can I enhance this person's life? First of all, I'm going to engage them in conversation, which says, I think you're worth talking to. So I think we have to overcome that basic tendency to focus in on ourselves, and we have to learn the art of focusing in on other people.
Hmm. Now, how can, because you say that all of these love languages, even though we have, you know, a primary and a secondary for the most part, all of them can be learned and all of them can be practiced. What's a good way to go about doing that? Like, what are some strategies for people who, you know, because I think there are a lot of singles in our audience who are like, I'm going to sit down with my friends and we're going to figure out what our love languages are. Because one, that's just interesting. And two, it may be actually helpful in the relationship. Yeah. But as we start cultivating that and practicing it, especially with people who didn't grow up with a lot of affirmation of any sort, and they're kind of like, I don't even know where to start. What are some good strategies for doing that?
Well, it depends on what the love language is. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about words of affirmation and you grew up in a home where you didn't receive words of affirmation, it will be a learning curve. Mm. And what I suggest is you write down some sentences that you've heard other people say, or maybe you've read them in a book or a magazine.
Or just a greeting card.
Yeah, or a greeting card. Write them down and then stand in front of a mirror and read them out loud several times, maybe two or three times a day for a week or two, so you get comfortable hearing yourself say these words. Then you pick out one of them and you say them to a friend and you've broken the silence. Hmm. The second time will be easier. The third time will be, it's like learning any language. You have to start with baby steps. And if it's physical touch and you were never touched and you don't feel comfortable touching people, you know, and you say, I'm not a touchy-feely person, you know, well, start with little things. Just put your finger on someone's shoulder just for a second, you know. And you take little steps and you learn, it becomes more comfortable as you move along.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's interesting because, like I said, I mean, it's been so hard for me to practice some of these things and learn, or I had assumptions about things that I was doing when, in fact, I wasn't doing that at all. What would you say as far as, you know, let's talk a little bit about the love language of physical touch and how can that be appropriately, I mean, beyond the finger on the shoulder, appropriately expressed both between single people and then singles to others, whether family members or how, because I think it's very, I mean, I have some, in fact, I love in the book the story that you share about the girl who went to church just so she'd get hugged every Sunday. Yeah. I mean, and that was important to her. What are some good ways to do that and to cultivate it and grow in that appropriately?
Well, I think there are appropriate physical touches. We all know they're inappropriate touches, and the whole sexual harassment culture that we have is a huge issue. But that doesn't mean we should draw back from physical touch. I would say, first of all, observe the person that you have the relationship with, a friendship, or maybe just an acquaintance. Observe them. Do they touch other people? Do they pat people on the back? Do they give people a side hug or even a forward hug? Do they give high fives? If they do, you can assume that a physical touch would be meaningful to that person. So you can give a pat on the back or a hug or a high five or a firm handshake. If you see people and you don't ever see them touching anyone else, and if you try to touch them, they stiffen up, then you can know physical touch is not their language. So you don't need to go there with them. But I think that's part of it, is observing the other person to find out if touch would be meaningful to them. And then you think in terms of, what would I feel comfortable with if someone were touching me? What kind of touches would I feel comfortable with that don't have sexual overtones, especially if it's not a dating relationship? And then those are the kind of touches that you could feel safe in giving to other people.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, well, I want to turn the corner here a little bit. You have another book, actually, that you've written that's very applicable to our audience called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Got Married. And obviously, there are threads of love languages throughout this as well, and just ways that you can truly understand your spouse and, you know, what you feel you should know before you get married, and then what kind of were wake-up calls afterwards. And I kind of want you to start out by talking a little bit about your the start of your marriage, Dr. Chapman, and what were some of the biggest, you know, things that hit you unawares as you entered into marriage and just probably assumed, oh, this was going to be easy, and then you found out, oh, no, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first thing that hit me was I lost the emotional feelings that I had for my wife, these euphoric feelings. You know, in the dating stage, when we were in love, she was totally perfect. I didn't see any flaws in her. And I was going to be happy forever married to this woman. In 2 years, I came down off the high. That's the average, 2 years. And I was disillusioned. And I thought, wait a minute. I don't feel the way I used to feel. maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I shouldn't have married this person. And then the differences started to emerge in our relationship, things that irritated me, things I didn't like about her. And before long, I was wondering, why did we get married? I mean, you know, I don't really like her. I was not prepared for that. Mm-hmm. Had I known that the average lifespan of the in-love experience was 2 years and everybody comes down off the high, I think it would have made my life much, much easier, because I would have realized that there is a transition between stage one of romantic feelings and stage two of romantic feelings. And stage two is where the five love languages have to kick in, mm-hmm. and you have to choose to love each other in the right language. See, looking back on our marriage, I realized my wife's language was acts of service, and mine, words of affirmation. I was in graduate school. I didn't have much time to help her around the apartment. You know, I didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I expected her to cook and wash the dishes and vacuum the floors and do the whole thing. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't helping her at all. So she wasn't feeling loved after she came down off the high. She wasn't giving me words of affirmation, because in her mind,
you weren't doing anything.
I didn't deserve words of affirmation.
Right.
So we didn't know what was going on. It's mm-hmm. just we didn't have feelings for each other, and the negative feelings set in, and then we argued about things and ended up saying nasty things about each other. And, you know, it was really, I was just totally disillusioned. If I had known that there were these two stages, and if I had known about the five love languages, and we could have discovered that before we got married, which you can, mm-hmm. and I could have moved into the marriage knowing her language and starting helping her from the very beginning, and she started giving me words of affirmation from the very beginning, mm-hmm. when we came down off the high, we would have hardly missed it, because we would be connecting with each other emotionally. Mm-hmm. Just those two concepts, to me, could have radically helped me if I had known those before I got married.
Yeah. I thought it was so great, the illustration you gave of how you basically were judging her for watching TV.
Yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah.
You thought, how trivial to just be watching TV. You should be reading a good book, because
yeah.
that's what I like doing. And that's
yeah,
why.
How could she waste her time yeah. doing that, you know?
Doing all that. So,
yeah.
Well, give us, because you were talking a little bit about, you know, yeah, if they can just know this before marriage. How can couples know what, in fact, they don't know? I mean, yeah. a lot of couples, I think, just go and they assume this is going to be easy. I'm a great person. I'm hoping they're a great person.
Yeah.
You know, if not, they'll realize how great I am and fix themselves.
Yeah.
So how can couples kind of discover this on the front end and know what needs to be honed in on and worked on?
Well, you know, Lisa, that's why I wrote this book, is that I'm saying to singles, you may not even be dating yet, but if you ever plan to get married, there's some things you need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of laying those things out, at mm-hmm. least 12 things mm-hmm. that I know now that had I known earlier would have made my marriage easier.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying to them, you know, now is the time to prepare for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're a freshman in college. Maybe you've just finished college. Maybe you don't not even in a relationship. But if you ever plan to get married, there's some things you need to learn, and you can learn them now. For example, how to solve conflicts without arguing.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I didn't assume we'd have any conflicts mm-hmm. when we were in love. But we did, and I had no plan for handling them. So if you have no plan, what do? You explain it to them, mm-hmm. why they ought to agree with you, and they explain it to you, and then you yell and scream at each other, mm-hmm. you know? And if I had known how to solve conflicts without arguing, the basic concept being empathetic listening, I could have learned that with a college roommate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in college, if you're not getting along with your roommate, what do? Just get a new roommate,
right.
you know? I could have learned how to resolve conflicts, how to listen empathetically, and then find something that works for both of us. You can learn that in other relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Singles have conflicts all the time, at work and in social settings, at church. Let's learn how to resolve those things now, so when you get married, you've got a plan for mm-hmm. how to handle conflicts.
So what if you go into, whether you're married or you're trying to do this when you're still single, you go into one of those things and you say, okay, I want to take a time out. I want to listen to your perspective, do this empathetic listening. You know, I think most people do that with the assumption that then that person is going to say, okay, now let me listen to you. What if they're yeah. just like, this is bogus and my way's right and forget it?
Well, you can't.
Then you have to move into forgiveness is not a,
and apologizing,
which is one of the other
yeah,
things.
Yeah, and apologizing. Yeah, that's right. Well, I think you can't make somebody listen to you empathetically.
Mm-hmm.
But if you set the model, you set the example to them, and you listen empathetically, and you say to them, you know, what you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. Now you're not an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're a friend. Then you say, let me share my perspective. Mm-hmm. And because you've said to them, what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and it does, it always makes sense in their head, mm-hmm. and you've listened long enough to be able to say, that makes sense. Now let me give you my perspective. And they'll, chances are they'll hear your perspective and hopefully will learn how to say to you, well, I can see how you could think that. That makes sense too. Mm-hmm. Now, how can we solve the problem? Mm-hmm. And you spend your energy looking for a solution rather than spending your energy trying to win an argument.
Okay. So let's talk kind of hand in hand with that. Let's talk about practicing forgiveness, because you have a chapter on this about, you know, not relying on your feelings for when you're ready to forgive, but actively forgiving. Why is that so important, and what does that look like for someone that doesn't know what to look for when they're thinking of forgiving?
Well, I think, first of all, what happens in relationships is there's an offense. Somebody offends the other person, whether it's a marriage or whether it's a dating relationship or a friendship. We do something or fail to do something that causes an offense. Once we realize that we've offended someone, the biblical response is we go apologize. Mm-hmm. And we say, look, I'm sorry. I realize I shouldn't have done that. We apologize. Forgiveness is the response to an apology. Now, if they don't apologize, the Bible's very clear. Luke 17, Jesus said, if your brother offends you, you go confront him. You go share that with him. And if he repents, you forgive him. So you go to the person and you say, you know, maybe I'm misreading this. Maybe I misheard what you said or did, but I'm hurt, and because I value our relationship, I want to share this with you. And you tell them what happened and how you responded to it. And they have a chance then to explain to you perhaps something you didn't see about it, and you realize, oh, I misunderstood, and the whole thing is solved. Or they say to you, you know, I was wrong. I should not have done that, and I hope you'll forgive me. And forgiveness is a response to an apology. So there's always something to do. If you've been offended, either they come and apologize and then you forgive, or you go confront them, give them a chance to apologize or explain, and if they apologize, you forgive them. If they refuse to apologize and they say, you know, well, that's wrong, or I didn't do that, or, you know, whatever, and you know they did, I think you release the person to God. And you say, Lord, I did what your word tells me to do. I've confronted them. They deny it. So if there's anything else I can do, I'm willing to do it. But I'm going to turn them and turn my hurt over to you. And you're not going to allow the pain and the anger to mess up your life. You're going to release the person. And if they come to apologize later, you forgive them.
Yeah. That's good. I noticed you also have a couple chapters in here that I thought were really good on practical aspects of marriage, one being roles within a marriage and how, you know, because a lot of singles, especially if they get married later, are like, yeah, my life was totally ordered. I knew exactly what I did when. I had my schedule. I had, and all of a sudden you throw another person in the mix and you're like, bah! Yeah. And then you have one on finances as well. I want to camp out just as we wrap up here on one near the end that I think our generation has to talk about. And that is, I think you call it spirituality cannot be equated with going to church.
Yeah.
And this idea of, do you really know the character and the spiritual state of the person that you're marrying? And what are they saying versus what are you observing in their life? And so talk to us about why that's so important and what some of the signs are and how you can ferret some of that out. Because obviously we're not going to marry someone perfect. Yeah. Not everyone's going to be, you know, Jim Elliot just saying, well, let's just go and witness to every tribal group, you know, whatever, which is what some people are expecting. But, you know, balancing reality with, this is not okay.
Yeah. Well, I think the reason the spiritual foundation is so important in a relationship is because it affects everything else. You know, my belief about God, my belief about scriptures is going to affect everything I do. And if we don't have the same view of God and we don't have the same view of the scripture and we don't have an intimate relationship with God, or at least one of us doesn't, we set ourselves up for all kind of conflicts, not just in the spiritual area, but in every other area of life. But if we hold in common a commitment to Christ and a commitment to Scripture, we at least have the same foundation on which we're going to build our lives. And I think oftentimes we overlook this, and we do equate spirituality with going to church. And we're happy if the person says, oh yeah, I'm a Christian, I go to church, I've been to church my whole life. Well, there's all kind of Christians. You know, there's Christmas Christians and Easter Christians, and there's Sunday morning Christians, and there's Wednesday night Christians, and there's daily devotional Christians, you know. And if you're going to get married, you need to know what kind of Christian you're marrying, if they indeed claim to be a Christian. You know, our daughter broke up with a guy that she was really in love with and had dated him for two years. And she said, "Dad, he said he was a Christian, but we're not marching to the beat of the same drummer. There's just so many areas in which, you know, he's just not moving the direction I'm moving in." And she said, "It's hard. I mean, I hate to break up with him because there's a lot of things I like about him." She said, "But I can't marry somebody that's not marching to the beat of the same drummer." And so she broke up with him. And, you know, 3 years later, she met another guy, and then he was passionate for Jesus, and they've had a wonderful life for 15 years now. So I do think it's important, and I think it can be a deal breaker if we're not together spiritually.
Which is why it's so important. I mean, just as I think of that story, I mean, had her spiritual compass not been straight, that's why we need to cultivate our relationship with the Lord so that we know what is important, how to keep first things first, so that the Holy Spirit is constantly prompting us. So we know, because if I had a nickel for every time I hear a single young adult say, "Well, Lisa, it's okay because he's willing to go to church with me," or he's, you know, and it's like, really, you know, this is the guy that you want to lead your household someday, you know, and to not assume that someone's going to turn around or that someone, because like you said, the dating experience is going to be the most halcyon period you've got going. So
that's right.
Make sure you have things straight there. So, well, cool. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap up, but we're going to obviously have links to both of these books, The Five Love Languages Singles Edition and the one we've just been talking about, Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Got Married. I've been talking to Dr. Gary Chapman. Thanks so much for weighing in. We love it when not only in your experience as an author and as a dad, but also as a pastor, you've really heard a lot and are helping young adults wrestle through these things as they head into marriage and adulthood. So thanks so much for putting these words together and also kind of unpacking them a little bit with us today.
Well, thank you, Lisa. It was good to be with you. Keep up the good work.
What child is this who laid to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping, whom angels greet with anthems sweet, while shepherds watch are keeping? What child is this who laid to rest on Mary's lap is sleeping, whom angels greet with anthems sweet, while shepherds watch are keeping? This is Christ the King, whom shepherds guard and angels sing. Son of Mary.
Well, we are opening up this week's inbox as we do every week, final segment of the show, and we have Dr. Jared Pingleton with us this week. Hey, Dr. P.
Hi, good to see you.
I'm just starting to call you Dr. P now.
That's fine.
my new thing. I just give people nicknames, and quite frankly, if I ever meet you, you might get one, and so be ready for it. So, all right. Well, we have got a great question for you. We're going to talk about love. You need to define it for us, the entire, and what, you know, Scripture says about it, what the whole world says about it. No, I'm just teasing. We're going to narrow this down a little bit for you, because fortunately, we have a listener question, and it is, how can I best navigate the season of a dating relationship where one partner says, "I love you," before the other is ready to say the same? I can see that my boyfriend making that statement is his way of leading and taking a risk, and I respect him for it, but what do I do until I feel the same way, or if I never feel the same way? It seems that once the L word's on the table, the stakes in a relationship are a little higher.
They really are.
Yeah.
The question is a very insightful one, I think, Lisa, because this young lady understands the dynamics of relationship process, which are not always the same for each person. And to me, the relationship has to grow in a progressive way. And of course, it's ideal when both grow in the same direction at the same rate, and that hardly ever happens. So the awkwardness of her feeling he's more invested than I am is a difficult thing. And I think what's healthy is for her to be able to express that directly mm-hmm. in a caring way. Mm. Now, let's back up. Hollywood has thoroughly brainwashed us, I believe, in our culture about the L word, mm-hmm. that love is all these things. And what we need to understand, I think, from Scripture is that love is not the result of warm, fuzzy feelings. I think it's the cause of warm, fuzzy feelings. And feelings are nice, but that's not what love is. Because if it is, then that says Jesus died of an overabundance of warm fuzzies on the cross, and I just have a tough time wrapping my mind around that. mm-hmm. To me, true love is a sacrifice of oneself for the betterment of the other person. And so if this young man truly loves her, he will, four-letter word alert, wait for her, mm-hmm. because love is patient. Mm-hmm. And those characteristics defining what love is about is very different than the Hollywoodized chick flick sort of romantic fantasy. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of things in our culture about this, like love is at born at first sight. Well, that's not love, that's infatuation, mm-hmm. okay? And infatuation is wonderful, but to me it's like icing on the cake. Because there's nothing substantive in infatuation. It's like sugar and fluffed air and artificial flavoring and coloring and stuff. And if that's all we eat, we die of malnutrition after a sugar high because there's nothing substantive or nutritive in infatuation. And so what we need to understand, I think, about this whole sense of love is that love is a process that's progressively developed of caring, and it's much more of a decision than a feeling.
Yeah, very true. And I think that I liked what you said about that idea of, it does wait in the sense that there is an element of patience to it. And it's not just about, I have all these feelings, so now I just need to dump them on you and then leave right. you with the obligation to return them. And I mean, I think that can be difficult. And I've definitely been in that position before, and I see what she's saying here and just saying, wow, what if I don't return those? Will he be patient with me? And so I think it's a good question to have answered for him as well as her.
Actually is an acid test of his degree of caring and commitment, mm-hmm. because that to me is what love is. Love is a commitment. And there's a definition of love that I really like. I recently wrote a book on marriage, and I use this definition in that book about that. To me, true love says more about the character of the lover than the characteristics of the beloved. Mm-hmm. We often fall in love, and I don't think gravity's that powerful. Mm-hmm. We fall in love because mm-hmm. this person is so wonderful or so this or that or so attractive, but that's not what love is. That's mm-hmm. not what's enduring. What's enduring is character development, and it, to me, says more about, the character of the lover than the characteristics of the beloved. And so for him to say that about her, that's great, and she can receive that as a compliment, and yet not feel the obligation to emotionally invest in the relationship when she's not ready or not there. And another point about that love and first sight thing that I see so often in our culture is this. It's been said that love at first sight often dies at first slight. Hmm. Hmm. So often an acid test of a relationship developing at this point is how well does the couple manage conflict? And this mm-hmm. is a great opportunity for them to do that mm-hmm. because they're in a different place. And that's realistic. Couples will always be at a different place at different times in different ways for different reasons. And there are seasons of relationship that have to be negotiated. So yeah. I think it offers a great opportunity for dialogue, for intimacy, for sharing of one's soul. And I think another part here for her may be the vulnerability of, can I trust him to take the truth in a way that doesn't make him feel rejected? Right. So I think her sensitivity to his feelings is very important here in this question. Mm-hmm. But a mature relationship would be able to handle that, to yeah. say, I appreciate that you care about me, and that feels really, complimentary and good. And it may be that I'm not at that same place at this point, but if you're willing to wait, we'll see what develops and move from there.
Good. Well, good thoughts. That is it, folks, for this week's show. Of course, if you have any questions related to this inbox question or something that was mentioned earlier on in the show, do find us on the blog. We post every week related to the show, or you can email us at editor@boundless.org. We will wait to hear from you. Please make sure you are passing along the show to your friends. We have only a few weeks before we head into the new year, and we're looking forward to what God has for the Boundless Show and Boundless and all of y'all in 2014. So that is it for this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson, for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of Boundless.org, focused on the family.